accession number 28653, Mr. Francis Lucas, Reel 1. Can you tell me when and where you were born, Mr. Lucas?
Yes, in a very small village in Wiltshire called Atworth.
Atworth.
A-T-W-O-R-T-H. Probably not known very widely, but a typical little West Country village with about 900 inhabitants.
And what was your date of birth?
My date of birth was 25th of February, 1917.
And could you tell us a bit about your family background?
Well, what I should say, first of all, I had the good fortune of being born into one of the most caring, loving and wonderful families. My mother and my father were not rich. Life was a struggle, as it was for many in this little village.
What did your father do for a living?
He worked in the local engineering works in Melcham, which is just 3 miles from there, and he was an engineer there. I had one sister, 7 years older, and in due course, she worked as a tracer, engineering tracer in the engineering works there. And of course, Melcham was the main source of our employment, because in this village, it was almost slipping away from feudal days. It was really a very, very simple life. But, boy, I enjoyed it.
Did your mother work, or was she just looking after the house?
No, my goodness, no. In those days, you wouldn't have the mums working. They'd be busy doing the washing, the cleaning, the cooking, and all the things that folk, that mums did in those days.
Now, you enjoyed your childhood from that. Do you want to talk a bit about what it was like? Give us a feel for it.
Yes. Yes. There's a local village school with about 70 or 80 children there, I suppose. And life there was very simple. There was a headmaster rejoicing in the name of Mr. Inkpen. A perfect name for headmaster. And he had a staff, I think, of 3 or 4 at most. And quite frankly, the teaching I realised now was very simple, very basic, but very practical. And there was no technicalities about it in any way. But somehow I integrated there all right. I think I was probably a bit of a problem in some ways, and certainly was when later I was able to transfer to a secondary school. But that's another story.
Now, how were you? Why were you a bit of a problem at your junior school, or whatever they called them then? You know,
I suppose because, first of all, of the tricks one tended to play, because you appreciate in a small village like that, the opportunities are very restricted, and one would get up to all sorts of pranks. One of the favourite ones was pulling the parcel, and you'd do that on the winter evening, and there, the big idea was you have a parcel which you make up, you have a long cord attached to it, the two of you will go to a house, preferably where there's a bush or a garden leading up to the front door. And so you would knock on the door, and Mrs. Brown would come. "What do you want then, eh?" "Oh, Mrs. Brown, I got a parcel for you. You got a parcel for me. Who is it from?" "Well, I don't know, but here it is." And you'd give her the parcel, and your pal, in a few moments, would tuck the cord, the parcel would come out of hand and come tumbling down, and you'd run away. And she'd shout out, "You young varmints," or something like that, sort of thing. And the other, also on a winter evening, there are many gates which simply rested on hinges that you could lift off, and we would, I'm afraid, go up the long street and here and there lift off a gate and either hide it or something. Shocking, absolutely shocking. But there we are. That's what we did.
And how did you do at school? So you were a bit of a handful at school, but nothing bad, just a bit of practical joking from the sound of it. How did you do at your first school?
The first school, I suppose, quite frankly, I must have done pretty well compared with the average there. We'll put it no more than that, just compare it with the average.
And this was basically a 3 hours stage of reading, writing, and arithmetic, was it? Or did it?
Little more than that. Apart from gardening, Mr. Inkpen, the headmaster, had a big garden. He'd take the roof of us out, so-called on gardening instruction, and we would, of course, dig his garden for him. I don't blame him.
What was your next school? How old were you when you went to that?
Age 11, and one of the very, very few over the years ever to be able to transfer from that school to further education. And that was in the Bradford-on-Avon secondary school, currently named the Fitzmaurice Grammar School. And so the world really opened up then.
Now, what was that school like? What do you remember of attending there?
That school was great. There are about 350 pupils, I would guess, that came over from a wide country area. And, of course, the teaching and the nature of the courses was very wide compared to what I've been used to. In particular, I used to love the science, the chemistry, and those sort of courses. And they had a very good English master. And it just opened up a new vista, completely beyond what I've been used to. And that was great.
Did you find it hard going, or did you do well?
That's difficult to know. I would think I probably had a very mixed experience. On what you might call the technical courses, I did very well. I found them so interesting on the science, the chemistry, and so on. On, we'll say, history and subjects of that nature, I perhaps wasn't quite as bright. And overall, I would think my position generally was a bit below midway. But it was fulfilling and happy at time. But again, I don't know why, again, I just couldn't resist doing pranks. And
what sort of thing there?
One typical one was we'd had a science lesson, and they referred to sulfurated hydrogen, that hydrochloric acid poured on iron sulfide made the smell of rotten eggs. And so what I did, I obtained some supplies from the local chemist of hydrochloric acid and iron sulfide, and I arranged on a particular morning to come in late when the whole school was at morning assembly. I went into the classroom and poured those two items together into containers I'd already brought, hid it behind something on the floor. And so when the morning assembly was over, and it was a mixed class, and we got the classroom, the girls who were there first were all clustered outside the door. And I said, "What's happening? Oh, there's a great smell in there. We can't go in there." And so everyone clustered outside the classroom door. The teacher came along and said, "What's all this? Come on, get along in." "But miss, there's a terrible smell in there." And the result was we had to have lessons in the gym. And later in the morning, during the play break, I just casually wandered there. And the caretaker was literally pulling up floorboards. So I went and said, "Mr. Sims, what was that smell?" And he said, "Well, we think it was a rat caught between hot water pipes and was his body was rotting. That's made the smell." I didn't say anything at all, and at a convenient time, I managed to get in and retrieve the containers which had the chemicals in.
But you got away with it.
Well, the great thing was, you would never share this with anyone. You keep it to yourself. Another occasion, we had a geography master. He was very short-tempered. No one liked him very much. I'm sorry, did I say geography? I meant geometry. And so what I did, one day I came in with a piece of candle and rubbed it on the blackboard before lesson started and no one was around. And so he comes in to start the lessons and said, "Now let's take, for instance, an equilateral triangle," and goes to sketch it on the board. And of course, with the candle grease on the blackboard, it skidded a while, made a short line, skidded, and so he broke off the end of the chalk, threw it away, as you would, tried again, same thing happened. He then looked at the board sideways, scratched it with his finger, and realized there was candle grease on there, and then there's a roar like a bull. But no one knew how or who it was, because I'd always keep it to myself and just enjoy it quietly. So there's a sort of thing which gave you a little bit of pleasure and gave you an outlet, some initiative, which I think in later life was probably useful.
Now, were you keen on sport? Was there much sport at the
Absolutely
school?
Absolutely not. Sport was not my thing, and I would do just anything to avoid it. No.
And what about the OTC? Was there an officer's training corps of any sort or combined cadet force at the time?
No, you mean later. At that time, we didn't have such a thing. It would be completely unknown in that area of Wiltshire.
Now, you were there for what, from 11 till to what age?
11 to 16. So that was a normal leaving age.
To about 1933?
It would have been.
And did you qualify with anything? I mean, did you come out of it with your qualification or the school certificate would be there?
Yes, I just had the normal school certificate. Nothing brilliant at all, but just the sufficient pass to justify my misdeeds. So.
And what were you going to do when you came out? You come out in 1933. What was planned for you by either your parents, your teachers, or yourself?
Yes. Now, in those days, you have to remember that jobs were very difficult. Life was difficult for folk. And I was fortunate in getting a job as office boy in the firm for which my dad and my sister worked. That is Spencer's Engineering Company in Melksham. And so I was engaged as office boy. And jolly lucky to get a job at all. It was difficult in those days.
What was the work like? How did you take to the work as office boy?
Thoroughly enjoyed it. But again, I think I maintain some measure of independence, etc. And I had an aversion to being strictly controlled, I suppose. But I hope I probably kept it within reasonable limits, again, because I was somewhat secretive.
What kind of duties? Was it just a explain what an office boy would do in those days.
Well, an office boy in those days, you come in early before anyone else, which was between 7:30 and 8:00. The mail would be delivered quite early. You would just sort that out, and you would make sure that the radiators were on in the winter, and do any sort of odd jobs that was around. And then during the day, you would be running errands for just everyone, etc.
Much scope for practical jokes, or did you keep that away from work?
There was indeed. I was just very, very briefly tell you one. I was in the general office, quite a large office, with I suppose about 30 clerks and others in there. Down one side of the office, there were four desks where the shorthand typists were. The shorthand typists were very good, with the exception of one girl who, for whatever reason, I just did not get on with. And one day, the office manager said to me, look, Francis, we think they're mice about. Will you go and buy some mousetraps and see if you can catch them? And so I did. And the next morning, I caught three mice. Part of the thing I usually did in the morning when going up to the post office was to get buns for the girls, and they would want donuts or whatever. They'd give me their order, I would go in and get them and bring them back. And so I had caught three mice that morning. I said nothing to anyone but put them in my drawer. And when I came back with the girls' buns, the buns due for this particular young lady, I replaced them with three mice. And I handed out the packets, the bags, to the shorthand typist, and made sure this girl had the ones with the mice in. Well, a few minutes later, when they opened them, there was a scream. A scream that electrified the whole office. And this girl was in hysterics. She tore down her bag, expecting donuts or whatever. There were three mice there. And the result was I nearly had the sack on the spot. Had it not been my dad, who was quite respected in the place, and my sister working in the drawing office upstairs, I think I'd been booted out straight away. Oh, that's the sort of thing that I remember so clearly.
Now, how many years were you doing this for as an office boy? Or did you get promotion before the war?
I was there. I was there only 10 months, not surprisingly. I was there 10 months, and I then found a job advertised in a local radio and music shop in Melksham itself. And so I transferred to there and enjoyed that very, very much indeed.
Now, what were you doing? This is a radio and music?
Yes.
They sold radios and...
That's right. So radios, pianos, music, and sheet music and so on.
And that's 1934?
That would be about 3 years from 34 onward.
And
I got on extremely well with a proprietor who was a lady, and she soon left me in pretty well complete charge. So it's just myself in this shop. And that continued until I realized I had to have something more progressive. And
you mean with a career?
That's right, yes. And I was aware that the post office engineering department, the predecessors of British Telecom, of course, were requiring new trainees, and I applied for and got a post with them, which was at their headquarters in Chippenham. and I soon integrated very well there.
And what were you actually employed as?
Employed as initially a telephone fitter and maintenance engineer. It sounds great at that age to be called an engineer, but that was their description.
And that was from, what, 1937?
Roughly 37, yes, until I entered the forces.
Did you enjoy the work as a telephone fitter?
I did. Enjoyed it very much indeed. You were going out, round about the area, fitting people's telephones or dealing with problems, etc., in one of their little green vans. And I found that very fulfilling and was quite happy there.
And did you have any big hobbies outside of you know, in your home life? Were you keen on the Boy Scouts movement or anything like that?
No, I wasn't really. No. I was just not that sort of person, I suppose. No, I had no great interests there. During that period, my mother died, and I then moved to lodge in Chippenham, which was near the headquarters, and I had friends and so on. But no other great sporting or other activities. I read a great deal, I remember.
Was it before the war that you got your interest in religion? Or
yes. That was about the age of 18, when I was still in the little village of Atworth. And there were three nonconformist churches, plus the parish church, etc. My parents were faithful members of the parish church. And in one of the Baptist nonconformist churches, there was a group who were very, very keen, and they would hold open-air meetings, usually on a Saturday in the village. And one of their meetings was usually held in a convenient area not far from the top of my garden. And I remember I would just go out and poke fun at them. And strangely enough, they were still very, very friendly with me. Well, it's difficult to explain, but there came a time when suddenly, all I can say is, I was convicted by their sincerity, and I was only 18 or 19, and I felt there's something in this after all, and I tended to begin to read the scripture and other relative books. And in spite of the rogue I was, if you like, I felt that I had to basically convict my life to something very, very much more fundamental. And I did then become what you might call a professing Christian, call it what you will, but certainly that was an experience which literally changed that part of my life.
And was this particularly related to Baptists? I mean, did you join the Baptists or just a general Christian?
Initially I did, but it wouldn't be always particularly related, because the whole question of faith is very much wider than that.
How do you think it changed your part of your life? I mean, what part did it change, and how did it change it?
It made me much more serious about moral issues. It was one of the factors which, if you like, gave me the desire to live a worthwhile life. I know that's counter to the tricks I did and so on. And so I was a dual personality in that sense. But nevertheless, I found this faith increasingly satisfying and responded to something in my nature. And I had a number of pals who had similar feelings. And so we tended to club together.
Did that mean you didn't drink? I mean, you'd be just about old enough before the war, 18, yes, you'd be 1935, 1936.
That probably would not necessarily have been the reason I didn't drink. My father was indeed a teetotaler, and somehow I just had no inclination to whatever, and couldn't have afforded to if I wanted to.
So you were actually a teetotaler?
I suppose you call it that. I didn't realise so much as the phrase, but simply the fact that it had no interest for me.
Now, were you aware, you were working at the post office during that period, you're quite perfectly happy living in Chippenham. Were you aware of the approach of war? Were you aware of what was going on in Germany?
Yes, very, very much so. One was well aware of it. And especially in the retiring room, there'd be a good deal of conversation about the approaching situation. So, yes.
And did you have any particular views on it? Did you see it as a threat to your lifestyle? I mean, did you think it would involve you?
No, I didn't really think it would involve me, simply because at that time it seemed that in our particular situation, that they would be reserved occupations. Although in the event that was changed up to certain age groups, and that's how I came to be involved, of course.
Now, the next thing would, I presume, be the outbreak of war. Do you remember the outbreak of war?
Very well indeed.
What happened that day? I mean, did you hear the broadcast? Where were you?
By that time, of course, we were all keen to know just what was happening. And we had at home, or in my lodgings, we had, of course, a simple radio, and was keen to hear Chamberlain and the other people with their announcements and so on, and found it quite a traumatic thing when it was finally announced that war had been declared. Pull these curtains.
Quite traumatic, you said.
Yes. It was quite traumatic, because one realised that now life was going to change, very much indeed. There had been the progression, of course, coming up to it, with increased activity in the local factories, particularly again in the engineering factory where my father still worked, because that was changing over to munitions. And you sense that you're on the verge of something which was fundamental and you couldn't personally cope with. You had to go along with the tide of it.
Were you pro or anti? I mean, did you think it was a just war at the time? Because you had religious beliefs, so some people took against it.
Yes. In point of fact, I did consider seriously whether I should become a conscientious objector. And several of my friends and colleagues even urged this upon me. And yet somehow, fundamentally, I didn't feel that was right. And in point of fact, I never pursued that and instead just went along with the situations as it opened up and developed.
Why didn't you think it was right?
You see, many of these things you can't define. There's always something deep inside you. And I just felt, I know that's an unsatisfying expression, I just felt it was not right to, that one had to play one's part. And that I was willing to do.